Hi, how are you? I'm suffering here from allergies. It's crazy, man. You can call me Captain Allergies with my sidekick, Sniffing Bastard.
Ron Van Dam is an experienced talk show host. Do not attempt to try this at home.
Please don't.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
I went through an entire box of tissues yesterday.
Whatever.
You don't care. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show, he said.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you, Julie. I am your host. She wasn't kidding. Why would she lie to you? Why would she lie to you about me being your host? What would she gain from that? That's ridiculous. How could you doubt her? Hi, how are you? Do you feel sorry for me that I'm suffering from allergies? Well, you should. And thank you for your many cards and letters and your gifts and financial contributions, simply because I have allergies. And I won't admit it, I won't take any allergy pills for it. I refuse to take pills for something like that. But it's been rough, man. It's been rough. As soon as I go outside, the world descends upon me, throwing pollen at me and mosquitoes and ticks and fleas. They just, you know, it's like they don't want me outside anymore. They're putting me in a virtual prison of hell. But I don't care. Sometimes I go outside to get the mail. I have to get the mail. So I go outside to the mailbox and I get the mail and I go back inside and it's pretty much it. It's pretty much it. You know, they have those little step counter things that you wear. You know, it measures how many steps you take during the day, and you're supposed to do 10,000 steps a day at least. I'm averaging seven. Seven. Not 7,000. Seven. I even try to put the mailbox closer to the house, but the post office says, no, you can't do that. It has to be on the street, Ron. We know you don't like to walk out to the damn thing, but you know, it's that's where you have to have the mailbox, Ron. They call me Ron. Yeah. How you doing? Hey, happy July 3rd and July 4th to you. It's Independence Day. Funny, I don't feel very independent. I kind of need to depend on people, which is very weird. I went to the airport yesterday to pick up my person, my cohabitator, and she was coming back from a overseas trip. She loves to travel overseas. She's the opposite of me. She travels overseas. I have to think twice about walking to the mailbox. There's a little bit of a difference between the two of us. So she's coming back from Romania. Now, I don't know why. Don't ask me why. And I go to the airport. Here's why I'm seriously like messed up. I walked into the airport, into the international terminal, and there were a lot of people there. And I, you know what I said to my, this is kind of sick. I shouldn't even be telling you. I looked at all the people walking around the airport, and I said to myself, wow, there's a lot of people in one place. Who does that? Who declares to themselves, wow, look at all the people that I'm in here with, all in this place. Sometimes I'll go to a concert. I love to go to concerts, you know, as long as everybody sits down, shuts up, and watches the show. And I say to myself, wow, look at all the people here. I'm amazed by crowds of people. Like this doesn't ever happen. I know there's people who live on the planet with me, but I didn't think I'd see so many at once. It's freaking me out, man. So sometimes I'll talk to individual people. Bob, how are you? Great, Ron. How are you doing today? Fine. How's the wife? Good. She's fine. Thanks. Okay, take care. But it amazes me that so many of these human beings are gathered in one spot. It's like overwhelming for me. Shouldn't some of you go home? Aren't there too many human beings in one spot? Shouldn't some of you like go somewhere else? There's too many in one place. The airport's a very interesting place. It really is. It's a happy and a sad place. I see happy people. I see people coming out of walking off the airport gate there, and their friends and lovers are there to pick them up. And especially in the international terminal there, they've been separated for weeks sometimes, sometimes for years. And when they see each other, these hugs, they hug each other like, I can't believe you're still alive. These hugs and kisses and, oh my God, it's so good to see. Oh my God, oh my God. And you know, within 10 minutes, they want to put the person back on the plane. You're annoying me. You're an annoying person. Now I remember why you went away for so long. And they're hugging, and they're crying, and tears are coming out, and I'm just, you know, it's like, aw, 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 that's adorable, aw, that's adorable.
Aww.
Yeah, and sometimes guys will have like flowers for their friends or their women, and they're coming off the plane and give them flowers, and and they start crying. It's just so beautiful. And they're happy and they're sad. They're happy. They're tears, but they're happy tears. And then there's the people that I feel sad for, that their entire lives are just, they're carrying briefcases and little display portfolio things. And you can tell their entire lives are just jumping from city to city, sitting in hotel rooms by themselves, masturbating on the comforter. By the way, if you ever stay in a hotel room, never sit on the comforter. They don't wash those things. You know that. I assume they wash the sheets. That's my assumption. Why wouldn't they? But they may not. I don't know. The comforters? No. No. And if someone is going to use that room for sex purposes, chances are they're just going to throw themselves on top of the bed on the comforter and do their thing. Whether it's a group of people or it's an individual activity, don't ever sit on that comforter, man. Don't put your hands on it. Don't put your body on it. Don't even look at it. Don't even look at that thing. Do you ever see these shows where they take this blue light or fluorescent light or something, I don't know what it is, ultraviolet light, they turn off the lights and they're in the hotel room and all the semen starts glowing, and it's like a planetarium. There's like semen all over the ceiling and on the comforter and on the floors. And oh my God, why would somebody stay in a hotel room ever? Because you have to. What are you going to do, sleep in the lobby? Probably a lot of that in the lobby too. But I mean, where are you going to go? It's probably cleaner to prop yourself up in the back against the dumpster. That's probably a cleaner area. Anyway, happy July 3rd and 4th to you. It's Independence Day. It's when we declared our independence from the British, who, as I've said in the past, there was a king and just a crazy ruler. And then we gained our independence, and here we are, these many hundreds of years later, and we've got our own crazy ruler who wants to be a dictator and a king. It's just like what goes around comes around, doesn't it? You can tear up that Declaration of Independence, can't you? I don't feel very independent right now. I got to tell you right now, I really don't. I laugh, but I'm actually crying inside. Tears of a clown, ladies and gentlemen. Aww. Yes, indeed. Well, happy Independence Day to you. How are you? Today, this is the holiday of stuffing your face with things that you should never eat. It's a time to sit on your deck, in your backyard, in your kitchen, crack open a beer, shove a pig intestine down your throat, eat the charred grilled food, and have yourself a good time, and hope that you don't have to go to the hospital and you live through these couple of days when you're only going to eat salads again for a year. It's what I always say after I stuff myself with this crazy fat-ridden cuisine. I'm going to eat salads now for the rest of the year. Yeah, that doesn't last. That lasts maybe 10 minutes. This is the holiday for America's obsession with hot dogs. I've talked about this a few days ago. And remember hot dogs, man? They've been a part of our lives forever.
Hot dogs, Armor hot dogs. What kind of kids eat Armor hot dogs?
Step right up.
Fat kids, skinny kids, kids who climb on rocks, tough kids, sissy kids.
Even kids with chicken pox love hot dogs, Armor hot dogs. The dogs kids eat day or night.
Sad kids, funny kids, kids who fly a kite, big kids, little kids, kids who like to fight.
Armor hot dogs.
The dogs kids love to fight.
When man bites dog, that's news, they say. But when kids bite dogs, they yell,
hooray for hot dogs. Armor hot dogs. The dogs kids love to fight.
Tasty, huh? Why do we love this byproduct stuffed intestine thing? I think what bothers me most about hot dogs is this intestine thing, the fact that you take smashed up byproducts from animals and you shove it into an animal's own intestine. It's kind of an insult to the animal. I'm going to take your insides out, chop them up, mix them all up, and I'm going to shove it into your intestine. That sounds like some bizarre type of torture or threat. And then we happily open our mouths, put it on bread, and we eat it. I know you're not supposed to think of it like that, but that's what's happening. The stuff that's shoved into hot dogs, and you're not supposed to talk about this, Ron. You're not supposed to do it. It's like religion. You eat the thing, and you don't talk about it. Do it and shut up. They take all the stuff of the animal and that no one eats, and most of it, get this, is gristle. You know what gristle is? It's horrible stuff. Gristle is that fatty stuff that you can't even chew. They grind it up and they put it inside a hot dog, right back at you. I don't even know, but I'm going to have a hot dog later today, nonetheless. Joy Bauer is here, and you're probably saying, like, what's going on with the hot dog? What's actually inside this stuff? Well, Joy, tell us.
There's nothing more American than a hot dog. And this summer, we will eat over 23 million hot dogs in Major League ballparks alone. That's enough to stretch coast to coast from Dodger Stadium in Los Angeles to Camden Yards in Baltimore. But did you know hot dogs, also called Frankfurters, were first created using pork in Frankfurt, Germany in 1852? And hot dog champion Joey Jaws Chestnut set his world record in 2009 eating 68 hot dogs in just 10 minutes. Blech! But on average, an adult in the United States consumes 70 hot dogs a year. So maybe it's about time you learn what the heck is actually in all those hot dogs. The most popular hot dogs are either made from beef, pork, or both, fat, and lots of it, salt. Check out how many words start with sodium on that label, and lots of chemicals. Hot dogs are prepared commercially in huge vats, where rapidly moving blades grind and mix these ingredients with spices. This mixture is then forced through tubes into casings for cooking. Now, most hot dogs you purchase at the store are pre-cooked and they're ready to eat, but people tend to boil, grill, or microwave them at home. And we all know that dogs aren't considered a diet food, obviously, but how unhealthy are they? Well, despite the first ingredient being meat, hot dogs are not a great source of protein. In fact, one typical hot dog only has the equivalent of this measly 3/4 ounce piece of lean steak. Each hot dog is about 250 calories. 70 to 80% of those calories are pure fat. And that's before you even consider any of the toppings. Now, like other processed meats, hot dogs are loaded with sodium, which we know raises our blood pressure. Ugh. A 2010 study conducted by researchers at Harvard found that eating one serving a day of processed meat, that's the equivalent of one single hot dog, has been linked to a 42% increased risk in heart disease and a 19% increased risk for diabetes. So does this mean that you have to go cold turkey on hot dogs? If you're a Francophile, you don't need to take this to the total extreme and never eat another hot dog ever again. But my advice is to save them for those special occasions at the ballpark when it's part of the experience. You don't want to make hot dogs regular features in your grocery cart or staples in your kids' diet. And when you do treat yourself to hot dogs, try looking for brands that are lower in fat and sodium. Now that you know what the heck you're eating, proceed with caution.
Oh my God. I'm going to have a hot dog anyway later. I don't care. Just one, though. Just one. I'm going to eat it very slowly. And I'll have a large salad with it or something like that. I'll offset it. It's like drinking Diet Coke. You're still drinking stuff cleaner. They use Coke to clean drains and stuff. So come on, man. Come on, man. Get with it. There is one brand of hot dog that I do eat. Actually, two brands. Hebrew National puts out a 97% fat-free hot dog. It tastes like crap, but it's a hot dog. You can tell it's a hot dog, but it's not ultimately tasty. Applegate Farms puts out a brand of hot dog. It's called Applegate, and their hot dogs are about 100 calories each, which is down from the usual 200 calories. And the fat content is about 10 grams as opposed to 40 grams. And the sodium is down to, I believe, 300 milligrams of sodium as opposed to 800 to 1,000 in regular hot dogs. So the brand is Applegate. See if you can find it. It's their beef, uncured, natural hot dogs. Not so bad. It's a beef hot dog. Some people eat turkey dogs and chicken dogs. For Memorial Day, I bought myself a pack of chicken dogs because the fat content was lower and the sodium content was lower. And I thought, okay, most people can't tell the difference between beef and chicken. I don't even know the difference. I know it's spelled differently. So I put the chicken franks on the grill, figuring that, well, anything that's grilled is going to taste okay. And then I put it in a bun, and I ate the thing, and I nearly threw up. It was absolutely disgusting. I think hot dogs have to be pork or beef. I think that's pretty much the way that has to be. Anyway, good luck to you, ladies and gentlemen. The only reason that I want you to remain healthy is so you can listen to this program on a regular basis.
You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show, the podcast world's version of painful itching and swelling. You know they sell a cream for that, right? It's over the counter. Works really well. I've had to use it a lot.
Well, it is July 4th, 3rd and 4th, and who knows. I'll be back on the 5th, as today I'll be drinking the 5th. Ron, you're so funny. How are you so funny? Do you come up with this stuff ahead of time? Is it as off the top of your head? How are you so funny? Yeah, kind of. There's a location in Washington, D.C., called a newseum. These people have been on the show before. It's a museum about news, how news has been covered through the years, and it's fascinating. There's a lot of interesting stuff in there. And in the museum, they're doing a whole display about the First Amendment, which is interesting. Sequentially, it was the First Amendment that they came up with. So it's pretty cool. It's like they decided to have amendments at all, and this was the first one. So, oh, wow, that's amazing. So we're going to talk to the museum about that. Gene, how you doing?
Good. How are you, Ron?
I'm fantastic. Thank you very much. Gene Polodzinski is COO of the Newseum Institute. We speak to the museum every once in a while. It's the best museum in Washington and perhaps the entire free world. All right, that's enough.
Thank you for that.
I try to make it as good as it is, but it really is. It's an interesting concept. But anyway, I know that you've done a survey about how Americans feel about the First Amendment.
We have. We've done a survey now. This is our 21st year of doing the State of the First Amendment survey. This year we were able to do it with Forest March Group out of Arlington, Virginia. We surveyed the country and asked people what they think about their core freedoms and, uh-huh. and about some of the issues that are related to those freedoms.
Yeah. And has there been a change from previous years? What is the temperature?
Well, I think the takeaway for me from the survey is that with all the challenges to various freedoms and debate over things, that essentially we still have, by majority, a core belief in those freedoms and a belief that they'll go to the core of our character as a nation. Mm-hmm. But there's some interesting things going on. I think that we've seen a spike in the number of people who would say that the news media reports the news without bias.
Yeah.
But we have to temper that. I mean, as I said to some colleagues, no handsprings in the newsroom yet. Because we also find a corresponding increase, or an increase rather, on the people who only look at media that essentially supports their point of view. So, if you've self-selected media that only really looks at your point of view, you're going to be inclined to say, well, that's the truth. But I think there's a dynamic going on here, and I think this is going to bear further watching, because this idea of separating out from what was once general news that everybody got into these islands of news or thought bubbles is a dangerous trend for democracy, and it's something we really have to watch. We also found a substantial number, 2/3, who still think the news media should be a watchdog on government, although, again, that ticked down just a couple of points from last year. So in terms of the press, it's a very interesting time, I think, to see what's going on. But I think for those who see the press as an embattled institution, the good news, if you want to take something away, is that there's still a large majority of Americans who say, I depend on it, I trust it. And it's where we get our information.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know if your survey had anything to do with age groups, but I would think that those that are older that remember the Watergate Nixon administration would understand how important news is and the First Amendment in that sense. Those that may not have gone through that period of time may not understand.
I think that's right. And I do think our survey reflects that idea that older Americans place more trust in traditional media. I think your point about remembering why the press is important, not so much in our survey, but I have to admit, just from raw numbers, if you look at the numbers for ratings for traditional media, mainstream media, the ratings on television are up, the circulation for the Washington Post, New York Times, for example, is up. So, I think there might be a growing awareness that there needs to be a counter report to what government, regardless of the administration, is going on. And certainly those of us who are remember Watergate, remember the role that the press played there.
It's interesting that there's only been a small tick down in the survey as far as dependency and trustfulness in the media, when the administration that we've dealt with for a little while now has a campaign in order to destroy the accuracy and the believability of the media. I would think it had more of an effect, but I guess maybe it didn't.
Well, you know, I'm going to have to posit a couple of ideas there. One, you're right, we saw just a small tick down in the in the trust, if you will, factor. But but also remember that that's taking place at the national level, where there was a reporting on national politics. And the vast majority of news that was reported, if you just took that as a big, you know, figure, is local news, is news close to me, where I live, about my water rate increase, about my school. And so I think that debate that's going on, and frankly the attack by the administration on the credibility of national media and of political coverage, doesn't always translate into the fact that I can still trust my local news provider or regional news provider to give me that kind of information. And there's still a lot of trust, I think, in that.
Yeah. You know, come to think of it, I can't think of a national news source that isn't biased, although when I watch my local news on television or listen to it through media locally, they're just reporting the incidents and not commenting upon them. It seems that all national news reporting involves comment and analysis immediately after.
Well, you know, it's interesting you'd say that, because I think the rise of cable pundits has has really had a sort of colorization effect on that. When you really look at what comes out of the news programs on a national level, it's still pretty well straightforward reporting. I think it more resembles that local reporting you were talking about. But yeah, I think it's the idea that I think people want more news and less punditry. And I speculate that if you look at the, you know, I used to cover political campaigns. That news can be a little squishy. It's a lot of opinions and people saying this and that. Watch the increase in circulation and I think the ratings for people when they're reporting on the news of the health care bill, of the immigration ban. You know, people need that news. They want that news, and I think they turn to all forms of media now to get that.
I suppose. But your comment's very interesting about how when you seek out the news, you do tend to seek it out toward your own beliefs, and you tend to stick to that station, that's your go-to location. We're comforted by that somewhat, aren't we?
I think we are. In a time of stress, you can understand why some people will want to turn to mediums that they say, you know, echo their own beliefs. It's either everything is going well or everything's going badly, and we need to fix it.
That's right.
There's a comfort level there, and that is a trend that I think we need to be very careful about in America, because the whole debate over facts and fake news, there are facts. And Marty Baron, I believe the editor of the Washington Post, said the alternative to facts is not alternative facts, it's fiction. And I think we ought to have, as a country, a combined set of facts that we agree upon.
Right.
And we may view those differently, and certainly if those facts define a problem, we've got to maybe differently how to fix it. But we need a set of facts that we can all agree on, I think, as a country. And up till now, we've had those facts, by and large, I think, from news providers. And now we can just pick the ones we like.
The museum is a fascinating entity in Washington, D.C. Whenever you visit, that's a go-to place, but there's also other ways to get involved. It's just a wonderful organization. It's fairly new in the scheme of things, but kudos to you and your whole organization for what they do. It's just fascinating, and what you have there at the museum is incredible. I visited and I was just I was enthralled by the whole thing. How can we get more?
We've been for about 8 years, and we try to tell all sides of the story, and I think that's part of our appeal.
Right. How can we get more information about it?
Well, you can go to, for the museum, museum.org, and on the survey, you can go to museuminstitute.org, or even museum.org, and you'll get to the survey from that.
I highly recommend that everybody get involved and pay a visitation, but certainly go to the site. Thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thank you, Ron.
You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Love that place. Love that place, ladies and gentlemen. I love that place. It's great that they have things in Washington, D.C. that you can actually be proud of these days, if you know what I mean. Do you get it?
Ain't always easy these days to know what to give your kids for snacks. sugary this, high fructose that. Heck, even the stuff they call natural ain't always natural. But there's one snack when your kids ask for it, you know exactly what you're giving them.
I want Piggy Parts. I want Piggy Parts.
Professor Parker's preserved Piggy Parts are 100% all-natural salt-preserved pig parts. What parts, you ask? Well, some folks would call them scraps or ears or hoofs, but kids just call them delicious. And with their stiff, leathery texture, one Professor Parker's preserved Piggy Part will last a kid all afternoon. That's what we call value. So stock up now for school. You'll find them at the end of the pet food aisle in original barbecue or vinegar, garlic, teriyaki, onion, habanero, pineapple flavor. Give them a try and you'll see why kids say,
That's some good piggies.
Professor Parker's preserved Piggy Parts.
Makes my mouth water. Hey, this is the holiday where you sit outside and stuff your face and drink some beer and probably have some people over so you can't wait till they leave, you know. You tempt yourself with something that you later regret. It's also the time for the bugs, the bees and the mosquitoes and the flies to say, hey, I want to remind you, you're not alone. There's other species involved here in this planetary thing. We talked to a mosquito expert a couple of weeks ago. We talked to a flea and tick expert about a week ago. So today we're going to talk to a bee expert about bees. I don't know much about bees other than for most people, when you get stung, the experience is not good. Some people actually are allergic to it. They swell up and have to go to the hospital. Other people get these tremendous welts. They sting, they hurt, they're not fun. Most people, when they see a bee flying around them, they panic as if they are near death. It's kind of funny to watch somebody panic when they see a bee coming closer because they're a lot bigger than the bee, and yet the bee has the power to take you down. It's not size that matters, it's the power within. Unless it's people, really small, short people, really don't intimidate me. But bees do. And if I see a spider crawling across the floor, I stop everything I'm doing and I try to annihilate the spider. Spider never does anything to me, ever. Nothing. It doesn't bite me, it doesn't chase me down the street. Spider does virtually nothing. As a matter of fact, the spider can actually kill and annihilate some of the other bugs that bother me. But yet when we see a spider, it's not a matter of love and understanding. It's, oh my God, stop it. Stop. Get it out of here. It's funny how we react to tiny little things, some of them so harmless, and others can actually do something to you. So let's talk about bees. Let's talk about bees, baby. Shall we? Here we go.
Good morning, Ron.
How you doing, Mark?
Good, thank you.
This is Mark A. Miller. He's the Outreach Education Manager for Franklin Park Conservatory. And you're out there in Marysville, Ohio, I understand.
That's correct.
Is it nice there today?
The weather is absolutely perfect.
Fantastic. We're talking about how we can be kind to the environment, but that B is spelled a little differently, isn't it?
Yes, with two E's.
With two E's. And lately we've been hearing about the importance of the bee population and how it's dwindling. Is that really of great concern?
It is. It is of concern for all of us because something like 80 to 85% of the food and products that we rely on and use every day are the product of pollinators.
Wow. And bees are the only pollinators that can do this?
No. Bees are the best pollinators. They are really scientifically, naturally designed to be terrific pollinators, but there are others, such as birds and butterflies and bats, small animals and even humans.
Now, here's the conundrum, is that a lot of people don't like bees, and I don't mean it as a personality thing, but they sting. They can sting. Some people are allergic to bees, and short of, you know, considering what bees do, they don't want bees around them. Is that a wives' tale, or bees can be hostile, or only in certain circumstances? What's with that?
Well, you know, obviously, if you have an allergy to bee stings, mm-hmm. then you do need to use some caution.
Yeah.
But the average bee, the average honeybee that is pollinating most of our plants mm-hmm. is very docile, and it shouldn't bother you if you don't bother it.
Ah, so that's the trick. Don't swat at it. Don't agitate.
Exactly.
Okay. There are some people that love bees and are concerned. What can they do in order to help increase the population?
Well, having a pollinator-friendly garden is the way to go, and you don't even have to have a large garden to do that. It's simply a matter of providing what pollinators need in your garden. So they're looking for food, they're looking for water, and they're looking for shelter, just as we are.
And what type of food would what type of plants would attract them to the point where they're doing their thing and pollinating?
Well, a good variety of different blooming plants from early spring through the fall is the way to go, because then you're providing food for the pollinators all during the season.
Okay. So the plants don't have to be necessarily right up on your body there. You can find a place on your property that's not where you sit necessarily and provide this environment then.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And having trees and shrubs and perennials and annuals, a variety of different kinds of plants, mm-hmm. is a good way to go, because different pollinators are attracted to different kinds of plants.
Okay. What's the difference between a bee and a wasp?
Well, they are both flying insects.
Okay,
and,
I'll start there. I mean, because some of us confuse them and we think they're the same thing.
That's true. I would encourage everybody to get to know their pollinators, and the quickest way to know that it's a wasp is it has a very hourglass type shape to its body.
Okay.
Whereas bees tend to be kind of fat.
Okay, kind of fat. Because they're pollinating and they're bringing stuff around and getting fat.
I
pollinate more than 3 times a day. And I'm not talking about what you're thinking. I'm talking about eating, by the way. As I was saying it, I figured, no, that's not going to come out right. And it didn't. Okay. So
that's all right. I knew what you meant.
Okay. Thank you very much. How do we get more information about helping the environment and the bee population?
There are many good sources out there, I would say. These days, most people are looking for information online. There are a lot of good websites. Locally, all throughout the United States, the Cooperative Extension Service is active in every county, and they can have information specific to your area. But also, there are a number of other sites. If you're interested in bumblebees, for example, you can go to bumblebeewatch.org.
Uh-huh.
And I would say that ortho.com/pollinator mm-hmm. is a good way to go as well for information.
Okay, great. Now, what about, why is the bee population dwindling? What happened?
Well, it's a complicated issue, and there are a number of factors that scientists are looking at, but part of it is parasites, and the part of it is loss of habitat. That's really a critical issue. And part of it is the misuse of pesticides.
Oh, the misuse of pesticides. Okay. All right. Well, Mark, thank you so much for the information today. We appreciate it. Maybe that'll help.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
I'll never think about bees the same way again for the next day. Ladies and gentlemen, we're just about out of time. I hope you have a great holiday. I do want to say, as I do every year, in many states, fireworks are illegal. In other states, it's okay, but you be damn careful if you want all your fingers. And I know that sounds just very pedestrian, but fireworks are explosives, and you got to be real careful with them. And as I said, in many states, you really shouldn't be doing it. Just follow the law. Just watch it on TV or go to an organized display in one of your nearby towns or cities. But doing it in your backyard is just kind of, oh, how can I put it tastefully, moronic. It just, people that set off fireworks, I don't quite get the pleasure that's derived. Here I am lighting something, it goes into the air, and it bangs and pops. I'm excited. I mean, what? What? Now, when you go to fireworks display, where they have the various colors and the various shapes, that's somewhat visually pleasing to the eye, I would suppose. But something just going up in the air and then banging and making a large bang sound, I don't quite get the exhilaration or the reward involved in something like that. I mean, you might as well just turn your car on, shove things up the exhaust pipe, and wait for the car to backfire, and then applaud in jubilation. I don't quite get all of that stuff. But you know what? I wasn't put on this earth to understand everything. I think I was put on this earth to complain about it. So that's what I did. Have yourself a wonderful holiday. Don't have too many hot dogs, man. Just be careful, okay? Just be careful. And I'll be with you next time. Until then, I wish you peace.